it's not about, you know, compliance and you know, all that stuff. It's not about staying out of jail and avoiding penalties. It's really helping business owners or families improve their financial situations over time.
This is Future Proof, folks. Welcome back. I'm Bill Sheridan. Today, we're going to be talking about value and value pricing in particular. You know, in a profession that has traditionally defined value as the amount of time spent doing something, this idea that we should price our services in advance based on the value those services provide and not on how much time we spend delivering those services, that's an idea that's gaining traction, but it's gaining that traction ever so slowly. Ron Baker, who's the founder of the Verisage Institute and has spent years singing the praises of value pricing, he says good ideas can take a long time to diffuse into the population and bad ideas can hang around for a long time too. And that's kind of where we're at with value pricing. But the voices calling for change, they're getting louder. And one of those voices is my guest today, Michelle River. She's the owner of Fore LLC. That's F-O-R-E. She provides education and what she calls implementation consulting to CPA firms who want to move from a time-based billing model to pricing their work in advance. And she's worn a lot of hats in the profession. Back in the day, she literally wrote the book on why and how CPAs should use social media. She was a partner at Keiko Isom for a number of years, and she's also a member of the Digital CPA Advisory Committee. That's the group that puts together the annual Digital CPA Conference. So she's right there at the point where billing strategies and future readiness intersect, and they do intersect. All of these technological advances we're seeing, artificial intelligence, cognitive computing, blockchain, they all point to greater automation in the profession, which could end up freeing up CPAs' time so they can spend more time becoming stronger business advisors for their clients. And Michelle says a lot of folks see a pricing model change is a crucial next step in that process of building an advisory practice. Not only that, when CPAs become more attuned to what's valuable in a client's eyes, she says they do more of it, and it greatly improves how they serve that client. And as a result, that relationship improves, becomes more meaningful. So all good reasons to consider a switch to pricing in advance. And despite that slow pace of change and an early reluctance in the profession to embrace it, Michelle thinks that's starting to change. There's more demand for it. You're starting to see more firms seriously considering it. We haven't reached a tipping point yet, but you can see it from here. So let's find out more, shall we? Here's Michelle River.
So Michelle, you're a little bit of a chameleon, and this is what I love about having worked in this profession as long as I have, is that I get to see colleagues that I've known for years kind of morph and do really cool new things. And you're right there at the top of the list when you talk about stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about how Michelle River became Michelle River. Where has your journey kind of led you?
Thanks, Bill. It's kind of interesting. So I started out wanting to be an accountant, and I'm not a CPA, but worked in accounting, public accounting, worked in the accounting department for two public companies for several years. And then I entered my first CPA firm. But ironically, I didn't come in on the technical side. I came in on the marketing side because they had enough technicians who were, quite frankly, cheaper than me because I lived in the college town of Columbia, Missouri. Okay. So, knowing the industry and the product, I got to start working on positioning for that CPA firm, Williams Keepers in Columbia, great firm. After a few years of working in public accounting, I moved back to St. Louis proper and went to work for a large law firm. Shortly, it wasn't very long there. I liked it a lot. It was very different, but it wasn't very long before I realized I just really like accountants as professionals so much more. I really enjoy them because I think that accountants went into this profession with a spirit of altruism. They love to help people, and that really ties to what I'm doing now. So between then and now, working on the marketing side, I grew a consulting practice into a 6-person agency. I then kind of streamlined back down to being a sole practitioner, where I stayed strictly on strategy, growth planning, facilitation, and that sort of a thing. And one of my clients, now Keiko Isom, was Kennedy & Co. And I already had a pricing background, which I can talk about in a second. But I began working with Keiko Isom and as a customer, and they hired me as, well, they brought me in as a partner of the firm. So I've spent the last 4 years in-house living and breathing, working with a firm that prices the majority of its work in advance. And that was really thrilling for me. I didn't intend to exit that partnership quite as early as I did. I exited a couple of months ago. And the reason I exited sooner than planned was because the profession has made a major shift in the last year or two as far as its readiness for learning new pricing models. And we can definitely go into that some more, Bill. But it's just that literally the phone started ringing off the hook and I couldn't do my full-time job as the firm's growth leader and be there for the profession as a resource to educate on how to price in advance. So I had a really, you know, hard decision to make and worked closely with my managing partner, Jeff Walden. And with his support and blessing, I went ahead and kind of broke out on my own. So not kind of, totally. Broke out on my own and formed my new company, and I'm working exclusively with CPA firms exclusively on pricing.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations, first of all, on the new venture. Tell me, how did you get started down this value-based road? Where did the interest come from? I mean, you know, I've known you for years, and when you and I first met, you were kind of looked at as, you know, the social media guru for the accounting and finance profession. And yeah. Then all of a sudden now you're like, you know, you're a value pricing evangelist. So where did that transition happen?
It's funny. I actually was into pricing long before I was into social media. Mm-hmm. So here's the connection between the two, because some people might think, what the heck does being a social media proponent and teacher have to do with pricing? Subject matter, not much, except for positioning, right? But from a practical perspective, both of those things, introducing social media into the CPA world, I was teaching CPAs how to look at social media in a new way. So I was teaching them to become comfortable with something they were completely uncomfortable with, absolutely forbidding their team members from using or being on social media, did not have a deep enough, rich enough understanding of social mm-hmm. media to appreciate it. I helped them see social media in a new way where they realized, wow, they could leverage the heck out of social media to really to have dialogue with customers, put themselves out there, and to use this as a marketing and relationship tool. You know, if they were literally banning social media when I started in that space, and there were only two CPA firms that blogged at all. And I taught the profession how to blog. So at the core of that is my why, which is helping people see things in a new way. And what I love about what I'm doing now is that I'm helping CPAs see this pricing model. I call it advanced pricing methods. I do not call it value pricing, and I can tell you why, but I call it advanced pricing. And I have a methodology that helps CPA firms, CPAs understand and articulate the worth of their work in a way that reminds them of the incredible worth of their work. I've been having many conversations with firms this month even. There's so much that we do in the CPA profession that we sort of take for granted. I think you would say an artist can do the same thing. My daughter's an artist and she doesn't fully appreciate the amount of talent that she has. She looks at her art and she sees imperfections and she sees, you know, things that she would do differently next time. And it comes so easily to her that right. She doesn't fully appreciate how you and I might look at that and say, well, I could never do that.
Right.
And in a way, accountants are similar. You know, there are so many people that are very intimidated by numbers and the concepts that we apply every single day, that we have to realize that we are not in an arrogant way, but in a confidence way, that we're delivering outcomes and solutions and helping people sleep at night. And this goes back to that altruism concept. It's not about, you know, compliance and you know, all that stuff. It's not about staying out of jail and avoiding penalties. It's really helping business owners or families improve their financial situations over time.
Yep.
And they forget that. Or my accountants forget that.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think, I think that applies almost to anybody in any profession that, you know, after a while, you almost forget why you decided to do that in the first place. Right. And you have to kind of reconnect with that why after a certain amount of time, just
totally.
To make sure that you're still adding value.
You know? And sometimes, you know, that like I'm a person thank you for mentioning at the beginning, I reinvent, I get bored. And you know what? CPAs do too. I see CPAs go learn a new credential. Maybe it's fraud or maybe it's valuations or something like that. And internal audit and various different credentials. And it's because, you know, you want to re-inspire yourself to bring new kinds of results. So, you know, there's the connection. So you asked how I got started, and I can tell you a little story. For me, my price in advance journey began pretty much where it's begun for a lot of people, and that's with Ron Baker.
I knew you were going to say those two words.
Yeah. How could you not?
That's right.
Ron is the founder of Verisage Institute, you know, has been talking about these concepts for a really long time, decades. I met him in 2000 at a Results Accountant Systems boot camp in Chicago. And that boot camp changed my life and my business thinking in many ways. It was thrilling as an emerging consultant. I had just hung my shingle out a year earlier after being in the law environment. And I got to see Rick Payne and Paul Dunn, two innovators, really, teaching hundreds of CPAs at the very same time in their intensive four-day program, how to be more customer-centric and how to be consultative well beyond compliance. And that was just so inspiring. And then this Ron Baker guy made a guest appearance at that event, and I had a wonderful conversation with him. There's actually a photo of me serving him food. Long story, I'll have to circulate that. He likes to hold that over my head because I'm serving him. It's kind of funny. But we became fast friends, and a couple years later, he inducted me into Verisage Institute as a senior fellow. That might sound really fancy and prestigious, but what it really means is that, you know, you as a fellow spend a lot of money traveling and doing free work with other fellows.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But you do get some apparel, so it's really cool from that respect. But no, all kidding aside, collaborating with such big thinkers like that is stimulating and exhausting. But for me, mostly, it's super inspiring. I ended up converting my consulting practice 100% to pricing in advance, and began in about the mid to late 2000s, helping other firms to think differently about pricing. So that was about the same time I was entering into the social media space. Mm-hmm. And that's because social media was growing. What resonated the most for me, Bill, wasn't necessarily the trashing timesheets, although to be honest, I don't like keeping time any more than most people. Some people actually do like it, but many don't. For me, what really just at the core of it for me then and now is that I think it's the right thing to do to give buyers a certainty in price. And doing so, they have greater clarity. You know, certainly they can plan and budget, and that's nice, but if you do it right, they have clarity about why they're hiring you, what the outcomes are going to be, and they agree that it's worth it. And that solidifies trust. Counter that, you hire me to maybe prepare some documents, which puts me firmly in the compliance bucket. And at the end of the day, I send you a bill that, you know, a surprise bill is never good news.
Right.
Very rarely is it less than they thought it was going to be. And it erodes trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is
basically, I mean, when we're talking about the benefits of value pricing, or as you call it, advanced pricing, the mm-hmm. benefits seem to me anyway to be mostly on the consumer side, on the client side, in that they know what they're paying for, right? I mean, it's not some nebulous concept of how many hours you're working, but this is what you're actually getting, and this is what it's worth. Does that sound
absolutely
in the ballpark there?
Yeah, and they know, you know, there's a why underlying what you're doing for them every time, and that why is much richer usually than the documents, forms, and tools that you're using to get there. An analogy that I use sometimes is, say you want to renovate your home and you want to add on a living quarters for your in-laws. You know, your contractor or your mother-in-law or something, your contractor isn't telling you, I'm going to use a drill. I'm going to deliver you a, you know, a blueprint and, you know, I'm going to buy, you know, this quality of wood and, you know, here's the step-by-step plan that I'm going to take. And yes, you do know how long it's going to take because they have to give you a timeline with some milestones. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, we're going to open up the back of your house. It's going to be open, you know, with plastic for 2 days. We're going to get that closed as quickly as possible because of rain. And then we're going to move into a, you know, the mode where you can't use the adjacent room for X amount of time. Like it's, they're managing your time expectations so that you can manage your life around the construction, right? But the whole thing isn't, I'm going to use a drill, a table saw, a square, and, you know, a sliding miter, whatever, saw, It's the end game is you're going to have a sleeping area, kitchenette, and bathroom area for your loved one that
they're not paying
them freedom.
Right. They're not paying you for the amount of time you're spending on it. They're paying you for the finished product, right?
And yeah, the solution.
That's right.
And the why isn't just adding a room. The why is the comfort and freedom and independence of your loved one. And I mean, if we take a step back, you always say, oh, well, the why is I'm adding a room on. Okay, well, why are you adding a room on? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're adding a room on for your mother-in-law. Okay, why are you adding a room for your mother-in-law? So she doesn't have to go live somewhere else, or so she can feel independent while you're still there for her or whatever. There's emotion in that purpose. And if you take this exact scenario to, you know, a family situation, a family business situation, you say, well, you know, the family business is like, I need to grow this thing. Okay, well, why do you need to grow this thing? Well, I have two sons and I want this to be their source of income and sustain them, you know, in their future. Okay, well, you know, what does that look like? Why do they want to run it? You know, what I mean, there's always a why. You sound like a 3 or 4 year old just saying, well, why, until you get back to, I guess, with your 3 year old, because I said so.
But you're absolutely right. It's amazing what kind of deep answers you end up getting when you keep asking that question, right? You keep peeling the layer back, the onion back layer by layer, and eventually you get to something really profound, and it all comes from just asking that question over and over again. You know, why
Indeed.
Do you do this?
Yep. And people don't all want to grow for the same reasons. They, you know, some people are, you know, serial entrepreneurs. They want to grow something and sell it. They want, so they can move on and grow something else because it's appealing to them. They have a short attention span. They get bored easily. You know, maybe they just want to solve the world's problems. Others want to create a cause or have a cause, and they want to create ways to fulfill that cause. Others do want to create the family business, yeah. That the legacy that lives on after them. Others want to, you know, they don't care who runs it. It's not for their family. It's for, you know, society overall, or they just want to make something that's big and feel like they're leaving a footprint on this earth in their time here. I mean, you know, when you really get to understand somebody's, what's at the core of somebody's objectives, you as that professional advisor can bring so much more to the table that's aligned with that than thinking about, you know, keeping your lights on next year and, you know, the compliance stuff that's involved with keeping those lights on. It's so much bigger than that. And our CPAs know that. I think they just get into the daily grind and forget about it. And here's what's at the core of what I teach. I do full day workshops and continuing education and what have you. A lot of it is how to, but a great deal of it is reminding them why they're doing it and why they're doing what they do. And we get so ingrained every day into walking into our business and creating our to-do list that in our proposals in the accounting profession, the proposals list all these tasks we're going to undertake. It's very firm-centric or, you know, practitioner-centric.
Right.
Instead, it's not your tasks that matter at all. That contractor is not, you know, giving your proposal isn't a detailed list of every task they're going to undertake. You know, cut the wood, nail it. You know, it's not that. The list is, you know, it might be a few stages, but within that, it's a picture of the outcome of the room and that keeping your eye on the ball of that change. But we present what we do in this task list form, which completely reinforces activities instead of outcomes. And we don't even really put into words, whether it's verbal or in writing, the purpose of that work. And what is exciting in the practitioners that I've been working with is their confidence that they're gaining, reminding themselves, oh yeah, I am a business advisor. Mm-hmm. Look at what I'm helping. Look at the impact I'm helping to have on these customers.
That's very cool. So, we here at the podcast, the MACPA BLI world, we spend a lot of time talking about the future of the profession, what it looks like. So many things are changing with the way that accounting and finance pros are working nowadays for any number of reasons. But how does something like this, how does advanced pricing kind of play into what the future of the profession looks like to you?
Very, very critical role. I see that certainty in price, which comes through, you know, planning and being able to price in advance, is a superior service model as we move into an environment where a lot of the core work that we do becomes automated, definitely streamlined for sure, if not partially automated. It's going to be a long, you know, the sky is not falling per se. That's going to be a long time before the bulk of our work is automated. But I think it's the right time for our professionals in our industry to remember and re-embrace the impacts of what we do being at the core of our pricing and our positioning, our business model. Because as we speed up, right now, if we're charging for labor and if, say, 2/3 of an engagement is the lesser skilled labor, say a first through fourth year accountant performing tasks that are going to be automated, right now those tasks at an hourly rate consume probably 2/3 or make up, constitute 2/3 of a typical, say, audit type engagement or taxation engagement. And if that work is performed in minutes instead of hours, and not needing the touch of that less skilled individual, the more highly skilled individual is going to be able to or need to spend more time on the work in the sort of the strategic phases, the phases where you apply judgment and assess the data that's been gathered, making recommendations into the future, and that sort of a thing. So if you're losing that biggest labor chunk, one, you're losing potentially a lot of revenue, mm-hmm. but one, it's you're able to inspire and reach and touch the customer at a much more strategic level. When you're not needing to focus on that labor intensive, you know, data gathering and processing phase. So the way that I see it impacting is really twofold. It's one, it's pricing based on the total outcome of why you're even dealing with that data and all that stuff that gets streamlined in the first place. On the other side, it's remembering why we're doing the work so that we can create more advisory opportunities, more advisory products. You see firms now buying up IT practices and sustainability practices and education businesses, various kinds of training, HR consulting, things like that. You're seeing CPAs leaning more toward the consultative side of business mm-hmm. more broadly and less necessarily on the financial data gurgitation.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the machines can do that stuff faster than we'll, and more accurately, by the way, than we'll ever be able to do. So
a decade and a half, you know, the profession is going to look dramatically different. It doesn't mean that every business is going to have shifted to, you know, all automation, but you can kind of see it right now. Like the way it's playing out is you have mom and pop shops who still keep their records on paper. And then you have the in-between businesses that use, you know, QuickBooks on their local computers. And then startups today are, you know, starting up in the cloud with a point of sale app on their iPad.
Yep.
It's across the board, right? It's going to stay that way for a while, where there's going to be room for everybody for quite a while.
And, you know, I mean, and this all makes so much sense, you know, and it seems so logical, you know, charging for the value you provide rather than the time that you spend providing it. And yet, you know, as with so many other things, and social media is just another example, but with so many things in this profession, we've been slow to kind of come around and accept that these big changes are important and that we need to pay attention to them. So how do you overcome that kind of almost gravitational resistance,
right?
for a profession that's so grounded in the past, how do we overcome that resistance to change and convince them that this is something that they should be paying attention to and looking at?
It's a challenge, big challenge to answer that. But I would say, first of all, you know, just recognizing change is so, so hard. Even when we know the outcome is going to be fantastic, think of going back to renovation. Think about getting your kitchen remodeled, right? You have this sketch, you've probably got some digital comps you've looked at, you know how amazing it's going to be. It's going to be awesome lighting, good use of space, very laid out in a very ergonomic way, gorgeous, you know, fun to be in. And you know that outcome. But in the meantime, when you have to live 6 to 8 weeks with no kitchen, it's really easy to hate life. You're sick of eating out. You're really tired of living out of a mini fridge in your bedroom with a hot plate and a microwave. I mean, it's just change is hard, even when you know the outcome will be wonderful. Yep. And so it's really tempting as you go through a learning process, because there is a lot to learn to be able to price in advance. The skills are not already in accounting environment. The CPA firm operations don't support it yet. It's not a very natural, easy conversion. So as you go through the process to learn some new things, which means learning new ways to look at the work that you do, learning new ways to discuss the work that you do with your clients, learning new ways of coming up with a price before you do the work. Sure, the opposite side is you don't have to deal with WIP at the end. You don't have to sit there for 2 days a month doing your billing. It's just all that goes away. But on the front side, you do have more work. And it's really easy and tempting to revert to your old ways after you experiment with this once or twice. And, you know, it isn't super easy the first few times. And so we see a lot of CPAs dabble with the ideas and kind of slip back to their old time at rates thing. And that's kind of a challenge. That also, you know, CPAs sometimes get excited about these ideas, but they're really not equipped with the methodology to make it go smoothly and be really more palatable as they explore these concepts and introduce them to prospects and even more importantly to current customers. One of the deterrents that I see is when CPAs think, I'm going to first talk to my current clients about this, especially my best customers, and that's where I'm going to start. And it takes sometimes a while for them to believe me, but I say absolutely do not start with your current clients at all. Start with prospects. And the reason is, I don't care how wonderful this pricing model is. When you go to a client and say, I'm going to start charging you for what I do in a new way, they're going to have some skepticism about it. If I said that to you, Bill, what would your reaction be?
Well, sure. Yeah. It'd be, wait, what's different? How is this going to impact me? And there's all kinds of questions that come up. Whereas if you're talking to a first time client or a prospect, this is just the way it is. They don't know anything else. Right.
So your current customer is going to be like, oh, you're raising my rates. This is your way to tell me that my price is going up, right?
Because
why would you change if it wasn't a win for you?
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So what I always say is, you know, start with prospects, get your prospects, see their enthusiasm, see their genuine understanding of why this is appealing. And, you know, even just 5 times. 10 is great, but even just 5 times with a prospect and really just soak up that positive energy, mm-hmm. then you can really look your clients in the face and say, we've been doing this on the new work that we're proposing on, and clients love it. Here's what they say, and repeat some of the things that come back to them, which in my methods, one of the things that I teach is using options. What clients love about that is, and the whole concept underlying a lot of what I teach, is that you're giving your clients control, a sense of control in their purchase that they do not have when they get surprise billings. Yeah. And when you can look the client in the eye and say they have control over their purchase, they feel more involved, they feel better about what they're buying, they feel great about how much they pay for what they're buying because they agree up front that it's totally worth it. You know, it just is a better way of doing business. It all sounds really good and well for me to say that. And you're like, yeah, I could tell my client, my current client, that right now, and they'd believe me. But when they start challenging you on why are you doing this again, and you don't have those positive experiences under your belt, your confidence gets shaken and they can smell it. Yeah, they can smell your fear or trepidation or uncertainty. And this is the telltale sign. I have, you know, seasoned 30-year accountants come back and say, no, my client doesn't want to be priced in advance. They tell me they prefer it if I keep charging them by the hour. And it's like, that's because you were shaking in your boots. They might, you know.
That's right.
But it's because you were uncomfortable and they could feel that. Yeah. And they just didn't want to change anything. So
those are great. That's a great piece of advice for, you know, first steps as far as like who do you start with? Now, let's turn to the what. Like, what would be the logical first steps for a firm that's has never gone down this path? They understand the value. They see the benefits of doing this, but they don't quite know where to begin. What would you tell them would be a logical first step for pricing what they do based on value instead of time?
Yeah, and okay. So first is there's a few things that I think that a CPA needs to get good at to be able to be really proficient at pricing in advance. Either every time or ideally to institutionalize this practice within a firm. Those things that we need to get really good at, and that is one, knowing in our heart and being able to articulate in writing why we're doing the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So being able to listen really solidly when you're first talking with that customer or client, or going in and having a probably a richer conversation with your current client than you've had in a really long time. Not the same as last year Sally conversation, but truly a rich conversation about what do you want out of life? Mm-hmm. What do you want out of your business? And stepping back and not like when you have a hammer and everything's a nail, don't be thinking audit, tax. Don't be thinking about your services at all. Be staying at that really high level of why, what do they want to accomplish? And even setting yourself out of it, like it's not necessarily about what you can do. It might be about who you can introduce them to besides you as the provider. What other providers can you either collaborate with or just introduce them to? So that's the high level I'm talking about, listening to them, is at a level where you're not rushing to prescribe something. You are just hearing the symptoms, pains, and desires of the client. Then the next thing to really get good at is how to properly scope your work. So once you do decide on the course of action that you're going to recommend for a client to undertake to get where they want to go, you got to be really good at understanding what it's going to take to do that work. And in part, yes, some of it is, you know, how many people for how long. You have to know and identify a duration of a project, just like you would expect a contractor to tell you how soon you're going to be back in a kitchen. Yep. Or using that remodel for your in-law. You need a duration. You need some milestones. And you've got to also get, and this is something that firms can do now, like we've got to contain the scope creep issue that we have. You know, if our firm has 80% realization, which is pretty good average industry-wide, I mean, a lot of firms are in the 70s, but that means we're writing off a day a week. That's 20% write-off. Yeah. We're giving a free day a week to customers. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And there, you know, we suck at scoping. We suck at managing projects. Right. So as a profession, even if you don't price differently, if instead of writing off 20%, you're only writing off 10%, think about how much revenue that is that you could recapture that without growing or adding one single client to your business. Think about how much revenue you can capture if you get better at those two things. So that's
a couple of big pieces of food for thought there. That's yeah, you're right. That is huge. I had never really stopped to think about that revenue piece there that you were talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of scary when you think about how much we leave on the table.
Mm-hmm. So what resources are available out there for somebody who's interested in finding out more or actually going down this path?
Sure. Well, you know, it goes back to my friend Ron Baker. You know, there is just gobs and gobs of content at verasage.com. And there is, his books are terrific. I'd recommend reading Implementing Value Pricing. It's not necessarily super self-explanatory at that point. And that's where I'm kind of coming into this space in the profession is that firms are struggling a lot with how to, and that's a natural question to ask. There, especially if you want to institutionalize this in a firm, there is a long list of considerations that, you know, you don't have to address, but if you want to do it smoothly and not clunky, if you have a sizable firm, more than say 30, 40 people, and you want to implement it in a way that institutionalizes these practices in the firm, I've been doing this for a while and worked with several firms. I would also tell you that this is pretty exciting. Multiple firms now, over $100 million are moving in this direction. They're learning and institutionalizing advanced pricing methods. And
that, you know, that is big because I keep hearing about, you know, these kind of small, younger led, really innovative firms moving in this direction, but you don't hear so much about like the really bigger firms taking steps down there. So to hear you say that makes me think maybe we're starting to turn the stone a little bit.
I think we are. And, you know, I'm working with several top 100 firms. My firm is a top 100 firm. I've worked with some top 200 firms. And they don't seem to need convincing to do this. I don't think it's a matter of if we're going to change our pricing model in this profession. It's really a matter of when. Mm-hmm. There's conversations at the AICPA level. There's conversations at every conference about this. It's not if, it's when, and really how. And I think firms are hungry for that information. So I am slowly but surely working on a book in this direction. Awesome. But that's gonna take me a while. Right now, it's hearts and minds work, Bill. It's not rocket science. It's really helping people understand and remember or get to why we want to do it. It's the same kind of consulting that I think accountants are going to do in a while, which is helping a group of shareholders or stakeholders who don't see eye to eye come to agreement that something is a good decision. So CPAs need to do that for their business clients. I'm doing that with CPA firms, is helping partner groups know what this really looks like and means and help them understand whether or not they want to do it. I'm not out here to push anything down anybody's throat, but if they're ready and able and willing, I'm excited about being able to teach.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you're one of the ones leading the way, Michelle. So
thank you.
Keep fighting the good fight, and thanks for being here. I really appreciate your insights and look forward to seeing what comes next. So thanks.
So fun to talk with you, Bill. Thanks.
That was Michelle River, a value pricing evangelist and owner of 4 LLC. You can learn more at 4advantage.com. That's 4advantage.com.